Welcome to Scope It Out with Dr. Tim Smith. In this episode, Dr. Smith will be speaking with Dr. Joe Hahn, professor at Eastern Virginia Medical School. They will discuss bioabsorbable steroid-eluting sinus implants for in-office treatment. This edition of Scope It Out is sponsored by an educational grant from Intersect ENT, developers of the Propel Mometasone Furoate Sinus Implant. Propel is the only FDA-approved bioabsorbable implant designed to prop open the post-surgical ethmoid sinus and gradually deliver an advanced corticosteroid directly to the sinus lining over 30 days. Propel is clinically proven to improve post-operative outcomes by reducing the need for additional surgical procedures and systemic steroids, and is the only product in sinus surgery backed by Level 1A clinical evidence. Please visit www.propelopens.com for further information.
Welcome back to Scope It Out. This is Tim Smith, your host, and I'm joined by Joe Hahn, who is a professor at Eastern Virginia Medical School. Joe, welcome to the program.
Tim, thank you very much for inviting me to be on Scope It Out.
Absolutely. Listen, I wanted to talk to you a bit about a recent study that's been published in IFAR about bioabsorbable steroid-eluting sinus implants for in-office use, which is different from a lot of the other trials that we've seen published about this particular technology. Tell me what you guys were studying in this.
This was actually a pretty interesting and exciting clinical study because, you know, I think that the future of rhinology is that we'll do more and more office-based procedures. This was a study looking at a steroid sinus implant that we're putting into the ethmoid sinuses and seeing the effect of putting this implant into the ethmoid sinuses in patients who have polyps on both sides.
Okay.
So in order to qualify for the study, you'd have to have had sinus surgery in the ethmoid sinuses.
So you had to have ethmoid sinus surgery bilaterally. You had to have recurrent polyposis. And then if you fulfilled those criteria, you were randomized to either having a steroid-eluting implant placed through the polyps in the ethmoid sinus in the office, or you were randomized to get some type of a sham procedure. What was done in the sham procedure?
That's correct, Tim. So what we did was we anesthetized. So most of the patients in the study were given a little bit of a vasoconstrictor, and they were given a little bit of topical anesthetic, and that was pretty much what they got. And then what the control group was, you place the implant into the ethmoid sinuses, and for the sham study, you place it into the ethmoid sinuses, and then you pulled it back out. And so you didn't deploy it into ethmoid sinuses.
Okay, so for the treatment cohort, you deployed a steroid-eluting implant into the ethmoid sinuses through the polyposis, and in the sham group, you deployed the device and then removed it? You actually deployed the device into those sinuses?
No, you didn't deploy it. You had the applicator with the device and you placed it into the ethmoid cavity and you never deployed it. You just pulled it out. So you inserted it and you pulled it back out. And the patients in the study were completely oblivious to what was being done because they were anesthetized to the point where they couldn't feel things. They felt a little bit of pressure. And they also had earmuffs and face masks so that they didn't know, they couldn't hear anything while the procedure was being done and couldn't see what was done.
Wow. Did you fulfill all the appropriate criteria for the Geneva Convention? This sounds like prisoner of war treatment, Joe.
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, it wasn't that bad. And when the procedure were done and you would ask the patients, you know, most of them felt a little bit of pressure, but that was it. And most of the time, and I don't think we measured how many patients were just got the topical anesthetic, but I know for our site, we just did topical anesthetic, and I believe most of the sites just did use topical medication and didn't have to do anything more than that.
Okay, and so the patients were blinded. They didn't know whether they got sham procedure or an actual steroid-eluting implant placed. And then the surgeon who's doing the procedure in the clinic is obviously not blinded, but the people who reviewed the videos at, was it 90 days or was it 6 months. The six-month video review, the device had already been removed, and those video reviewers were, in fact, blinded. Is that correct?
Yes. So the paper we just published was looking at blinded video reviewers, meaning these were otolaryngologists who were looking at videos of patients, whether that was control or the treatment group, and they did not know whether or not they were in one or the other because the device had been pulled out by then. And that was done at 3 months. And then in this study, we actually followed their symptoms out to 6 months to see whether or not their improvement after the treatment was sustainable or was sustained at 6 months.
Tell me what you found between the control and the treatment group. What's your primary time point here, Joe? Is it 3 months or 6 months?
It was interesting. So when we were trying to design the clinical study based on the information we had about the device, I think we were comfortable that the benefit of the device would be sustainable at 3 months. But we were all kind of curious to see whether or not it would still be sustainable at 6 months. The primary endpoint was actually 3 months, and that's kind of where we were kind of deciding whether or not the device was successful or not, or what the effect of the device was at 3 months. But I think we made the right decision and the harder decision to continue following these patients for 6 months. And if we lost the effect of the device at 6 months, so be it. And if we didn't, then that was great. 3 months really was the right.
And then looking at your result in the paper, I found it interesting that the video review by the blinded otolaryngologist showed pretty substantial differences between what the ethmoid sinus obstruction looked like in the control group versus the treatment group. That is, those who received the steroid-eluting implant had a substantial reduction in the level of obstruction of the ethmoid sinus cavity. And actually, the control patients, the patients who got the sham procedure, they actually showed a worsening of ethmoid obstruction over the six-month time period. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's a great pickup, Tim. So as you know, patients with nasal polyposis, you know, they don't get cured by sinus surgery. Their disease still persists, and postoperatively, they need some type of medication afterwards to try to prevent the polyps from coming back. If you look at the nasal polyp score and you compare it to the ethmoid sinus obstruction, you can tell from the data points that the ethmoid sinus obstruction is a more sensitive way of measuring the nasal obstruction or polyposis. And you're exactly right. As the time went on, the polyps started to come back. And you can see that endoscopically, you can see it based on the ethmoid sinus obstruction. But for the nasal polyps scoring, which wasn't as sensitive, couldn't really pick that difference up.
More interesting almost than these clinician-based outcomes, these outcomes that were measured by clinicians, are the outcomes that are measured by the patient. And you used a validated nasal obstruction-specific quality of life instrument as well as a visual analog scale for nasal obstruction and congestion. And I found it interesting that both the control group, the sham procedure group, and the treatment group both received substantial initial benefit from these in-clinic procedures.
And that's right. You know, when we're designing clinical studies, or even though we would like to measure different things and have different protocols, we're limited by what FDA tells us we need to do. And so what FDA actually wanted us to do was look at the Likert score between 0 to 5 and looking at nasal obstruction and congestion. They really didn't want us to use the nose course, but we decided to kind of include that anyways. But the nasal obstruction and congestion score is really what FDA wanted us to do. And like you said, they had these patients after the intervention got better, and even in the control group. And I think part of the reason for that is both the control group and the study group got Nasonex or mometasone nasal spray.
Both arms treatment and sham received Nasonex or mometasone nasal spray daily for the duration of the study?
Yeah, for the 3 months, FDA said that you couldn't withhold care from patients
right.
with nasal polyposis. So the only FDA approved was mometasone nasal spray. So we had to give it to them. And I think the other thing that was a reason why it was helpful was because these patients were coming in, they were getting serially scoped and suctioned. And when you're seeing them on a regular basis, it makes the compliance for the use of medication higher. Because as you know, patients after a while will stop using medication, especially if they start feeling better.
It's also interesting to consider the placebo effect here, you know? I mean, with placebo effects well known, whether you're using a medication or whether you're using a sham surgery, the placebo effect has been observed and probably was observed here as well. The skeptical listener and the skeptical reader will look at these outcome measures from the patient, particularly the nasal obstruction and congestion score. That is a 6-point score. 0, there's no obstruction. 5, it's the worst obstruction you could possibly have. I imagine something like that. And it showed that in the sham surgery group, after 6 months, they demonstrated a 0.5 point on that 6-point scale. So 0.5 point improvement in their nasal obstruction. And if they received the steroid-eluting implant, they improved by about double that, so about 1.2 points on a 6-point scale. So we're talking about the difference between the two groups of less than 1 point on a 6-point scale. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. So if you look at 6 months, the treatment group were twice as good in terms of nasal obstruction and congestion. You know, what's also interesting is whether or not the patients or the surgeons felt like there was a need to reoperate on these patients. And if you look at the treatment group, 31% were only indicated for surgery, while compared to the control group, which was 11%.
This was at the 6-month follow-up time point?
Yes, that's correct.
Interesting. Okay. So I guess it still comes back to, you know, there is cost associated with placing this type of technology and utilizing this type of technology. So, you know, this study doesn't answer this question, but I think the skeptical listener is going to ask, well, is it worth the cost of this technology to gain less than a 1-point improvement on a 6-point scale, which is somewhere around 15% improvement, relative improvement, I guess, or relative difference between the two. Is it worth the cost to avoid revision sinus surgery in some proportion of these patients in which you've reported that? What's your take on that? These are statistically significant differences we're measuring in 6 months. They're interesting data. Is this clinically relevant? Is it clinically important to the patient population that we're treating? What's your take on that?
Tim, I'm not saying this Resolve implant is going to cure sinusitis. I don't think it is. But it is an extra tool that you have to help manage patients. As you know, the polyps don't necessarily correlate to the severity of the patient's symptoms and how bad their quality of life is. You really have to look at the whole picture. I mean, look at the patient, their symptoms, their nasal polyp scores, and kind of decide, and the response to medication, and decide, you know, what option is the best option for your patient. I know there are patients who have bad polyps. They want to have oral steroids, but have so much of have such a bad side effect that they don't want to take oral steroids, and
right.
they don't want to have surgery. And so
yeah.
for those patients, this is another option that we can provide to our patients. It's not going to cure sinus disease with polyps, but it is a good option for a lot of
people. I think that's a good point. I think ever since this technology was introduced a few years ago, and we've all since been seeing studies come out on this, I think we've all been interested in its use in the office setting in particular, being able to manage the inflammatory disease in the office by placing something that elutes the steroid, and you don't have to be as conscious of patient compliance in situations like that, right? You don't have to count on the patient to use something every day in order for the therapy to be effective. And that, to me, that's an exciting addition to the armamentarium.
Absolutely.
So, Joe, while we're on the topic of these steroid-releasing implants, as I recall, you and I published a meta-analysis. You were the first author on this study several years ago now.
Yeah, I think it was 2012 was when we did that.
That was a meta-analysis combining two prospective randomized trials where the patients were treated with steroid-releasing implants post-operatively. So they had just undergone sinus surgery.
Yeah, that's right. There were two studies. One was a pilot study where Andy Muir was the primary author. The other one was the Advanced 2 study. The study design were designed very similarly. It was a prospective, randomized, double-blinded control study. And since it was designed the same, you know, we felt like we can look at the data together, and by combining it, we were able to increase the number of patients in the study to 143, which is a pretty large number for such a well-designed study. There are two people who kind of evaluated what we saw in the patients on day 30. One was by the clinical investigator, and the other one was by three rhinologists who were completely blinded to what the patients had received.
Yeah,
and
that's how I was involved in the study primarily, was I had done some of that blinded review of the videos. So you really have no idea what's going on the way those videos are clipped. I really do feel like that was a nicely blinded process.
Yeah, I don't think I even knew that, so that's great.
It then must be like triple blinded then, right?
Yeah, probably. You know, before the study came out and looking at the meta-analysis data, I think I would do nothing.
Meaning you would put nothing in the sinus cavity at the end of surgery. That was your standard of care.
That's right. Yeah, that was my standard of care. I mean, I felt like there was nothing out there, or there's no research studies or any products that would be beneficial than just leaving the sinus cavity alone and letting it heal by itself. But this meta-analysis showed that by putting these steroid-eluting implants into the ethmoid cavities after the sinus surgery, you were able to significantly reduce the number of swelling or polyps or steroid intervention. It also minimized the amount of adhesion or need for surgical intervention.
Yeah, I think all of these studies seem to be demonstrating that direct topical application of steroids to the membrane, whether it's in the office, such as the first study that we talked about, or whether it's in the immediate postoperative period, seems to reduce swelling and inflammation of those mucous membranes.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I would even say one step further and say it should be a sustained release, you know, a slow release of the steroids, because I think if you do it quickly for a short period of time, I don't think you get the benefit. I think they have to be gradually and slowly, steadily released.
Yeah, I think that the discerning listener would be asking the question, well, is releasing topical steroid over 2 weeks, which is, I mean, these release it over 30 days, but I think most of it's released over the first week to 2 weeks. And I've certainly heard people question, well, shouldn't we be releasing steroid longer than even that? Makes a lot of sense that we should be.
Yeah, I think so. And you're exactly right. After 2 weeks, 80% of the mebendazole is released from the implant. But yeah, I think you're right. I think if we were to increase maybe the dosing a little bit, or maybe make it a little bit longer, I wonder how much more beneficial it would be.
Yeah, certainly something that we need to look into moving forward. Well, listen, Joe, thanks again for joining me on the podcast. For me, a really interesting conversation. I hope our listeners have enjoyed it as well. And Joe, I look forward to seeing you somewhere in the world very soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you again for inviting me to be on the podcast.
Thank you for listening. Scope It Out with Dr. Tim Smith is a co-production of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology and Wiley. It was directed, edited, and coordinated by Joe Troiano, with voiceover by Anne-Marie Alvarez and music by Alex Ramsdell. All opinions in this podcast are those of Dr. Smith and his guests and do not necessarily reflect those of Wiley or the sponsors.